In the Fight, a Section 247 show presentation. Follow us on social media, Twitter and Instagram, at In the Fight Show, on Facebook at facebook.com/In the Fight Show.
What's going on, fight fans? It is I, Brett Halpern, of In the Fight Show, bringing you a solo episode, so bear with me. I appreciate everyone out there listening. For those new listeners, welcome. In the Fight Show is your ultimate combat experience, brought to you once a week. You can catch us on Sportinarium, Sportinarium USA, sportinarium.com, at Sportinarium on all social media. We're also a Sports Talk Philly partner and brought to you, as always, Sports Talk Philly, by the way, you can catch at sportstalkphilly.com. Brought to you always by Michael's Glass Company, the premier glass company in the Delaware Valley area. 215-338-3293. Please tell them that Mike and Brett sent you. Also, you can check us out on all social media at In the Fight Show. We're on Twitter, we're on Instagram, Facebook. We decided not to go MySpace. You know, we'll just let Tom have that. I think it was Tom, right? That was the main guy in MySpace. Anyways, we also have a group on Facebook, an In the Fight Show group. Please join that. Check out some of our most recent articles on at www.inthefight.net. All of these links will be in the show notes. So in addition to checking us out, as you are now live at Sportinarium, Thursdays at 5 Eastern on the East Coast of America, 10 p.m. over in the UK. Shout out to all our UK fans. Additionally, our episodes are available via download anywhere where you can download or stream podcasts. So what's going on this week in the world of combat sports? It's been an interesting week or so. So I guess we should lead with some, I guess, semi-bad news, which is that Nate Diaz versus Leon Edwards, which was the welterweight fight scheduled to be the co-main event for UFC 262. It's been postponed, due to an injury sustained by Nate Diaz. Good news, though, is that it's been rescheduled as the feature fight. So the feature fight being in a five-fight card, the third fight, so the fight right before the co-main. So it's going to be the feature fight at UFC 263, and it's still going to be a five-round fight. So interestingly, now at UFC 263, you're going to have Israel Adesanya defending his middleweight crown against Marvin Vettori. You're going to have Davison Figueiredo against Brandon Moreno, the rematch for the flyweight championship. And then you're going to have a five-round non-title fight. So it's sort of history making and definitely interesting. It really makes that card stacked. UFC 262 is still a really good card. I think now you're going to have Tony Ferguson, Beneil Dariush bump up to the co-main event. And that's definitely co-main event worthy for a pay-per-view. So UFC 262 is still a very good card and well worth purchasing. So this past weekend, we had UFC Vegas 25. I'm going to get to the names in a minute when we preview the upcoming card. I'm starting to get very frustrated with the titles of these events. But nevertheless, more importantly, we have a new number one contender in the light heavyweight division, and that is Jiří Prochazka, the former Ryzen light heavyweight champion, in his second fight in the UFC promotion, defeated Dominic Reyes via a vicious spinning elbow, 4 minutes, 29 seconds into round two. Believe it was the third ever spinning elbow finish in the history of the UFC. So in my mind, so Prochazka first fought Volkan Ozdemir, knocked him out in the first round back on Fight Island over the summer. To me, he is the clear-cut number one contender, has this super unique style. He brings some of, that Eastern European ruggedness combined with his thoughts and his followings of, Far Eastern culture. You know, he believes a lot in he talks about reading the works of Musashi and, the Code of the Samurai, things of that nature. Very interesting guy. And he has such a unique style fighting and striking from all angles, has terrible defense. This guy, so it's crazy. I looked up the stats. I believe he absorbs 6.88 strikes per minute in the UFC. Anything north of like 3 or 4, and you have a serious defensive issue. And this guy is absorbing 6.8. It's basically 7 strikes per minute. And meanwhile, at the end of the fight, he looks completely fine. You know, he's not bruised up, swollen, or anything. He did get wobbled a little bit. Reyes took him down in the first, but he was able to withstand that. And even though Reyes was countering him well with his left hand, Prochazka just, you know, not only does he fight with these strike from weird angles, he's also very powerful. And right, he just turned the lights off with that spinning elbow. And I mean, Reyes was out as he was standing and completely fell down, landed face first, like with his head down. You know, people were worried about him having a neck injury. But fortunately, he's okay. He has sent out a message via social media. Obviously, it's really crazy to think that this is the guy who 2 fights ago, he, for all, you know, intents and purposes, he beat, in the eyes of many, he beat the GOAT. He beat John Jones. And since then, he, you know, got knocked out viciously by the current champion, Jan Blachowicz, for the belt back in Fight Island. And now, in essentially a number one contender fight, got knocked out again by Jiří Procházka. So it has definitely been a fall from grace for Dominic Reyes. Hopefully he's able to turn it around. But for Procházka, he's definitely in the next in line. He's going to await the winner of Glover Teixeira versus the champion Jan Blachowicz. If I had to match him up against either, I would worry about the takedowns from either Teixeira or Blachowicz. I don't know how Procházka has not exhibited great takedown defense yet. Having said that, I do think he has the capability to knock either guy out. However, because of his defensive deficiencies, I don't know whether or not, you know, he could easily get knocked out too. This is a guy who, if you're absorbing 7 strikes a minute, at some point you're going to lose. That's just the nature of things. So, you know, aside from that, I'd say the biggest takeaway from last Saturday's fights were the night really belonged to Georgia. And I'm not talking about the state. I am talking about the Republic of Georgia. So in the co-main event, Georgia's Giga Chikadze defeated Cub Swanson via KO 1:03 into round 1 via liver kick. Boss Rudin would have been incredibly excited. Chikadze has become a lot more aggressive, knocking people out. This is his second straight finish. Prior to that, every one of his appearances in the UFC, though he was winning, came via decision. Now he, going into this fight, he was ranked 14th in the featherweight division, and I think he's earned himself a shot at a top 10 featherweight. Because a lot of people have defeated Cub Swanson. You know, he's a veteran, but not many people have taken him out in, you know, 1:03. So I think there's big things on the horizon for Giga. Secondly, in the main card opener, Merab Dvalishvili of Georgia defeated Cody Stamen via unanimous decision. One judge had a 30-27. 2 judges had a 29-28. Man, this guy, honestly, I think he rightfully deserves the crown of having the best cardio in all of the UFC. The guy literally is laughing well into the tail end of the third round. And it was a very taxing fight. You know, I would call this more of a grapple fest, this fight he had with Cody Stamen. And usually those are not viewed with the same fanfare or in the same light as slugfest. Because, you know, obviously we like, you know, Rock'em Sock'em Robots. You like when there's just an all-out brawl. But to me, there were such fast transitions with a lot of the grappling. It really was an enjoyable fight to watch. Also, Dvalishvili, he works with, what's the names? Ray Longo and Matt Serra over out in Long Island. And you could definitely see that working with Longo, Dvalishvili's striking is coming along. So, you know, and every time he has another appearance in the octagon, he really is just getting better and better. So I think this is a guy who is a future, at minimum, a future title challenger. You know, I think I need to see a little more before I can say future champion. But at some point, he is definitely going to fight for the belt. In terms, there were some undercard drama on the card. So Luana Pinheiro defeated Randa Markos via disqualification due to an illegal upkick. And I got to tell you, so first, the rule frustrates me. So basically, if you are on your back and your opponent has a knee down, they're a downed opponent, so you can't do an upkick. And that is actually how Anderson Silva at Rumble on the Rock lost to Yushin Okami back in the day. And there's been other disqualifications due to illegal upkicks since then. But to me, that's the most famous one. To me, you know, I don't understand why you can do an upkick if they're standing over you, but if they're hovering over you with one knee down, they can't, you can't. You know, I understand, I guess, conceptually why certain, you know, like stomping, for instance, is against the rules because the commission didn't want anything overly barbaric. But if you're going to allow an upkick in one situation and in a slightly altered situation, you're not, again, I don't understand it. So in this particular fight, Randa Markos was on her back. She landed, she did land the illegal upkick. So there's no question she landed the illegal blow. But after landing it, it wasn't a devastating shot. She then actually did like a up, she did a push kick from the back to Luana's stomach, which pushed her back. And Luana used that and then just sort of laid back. And yeah, afterwards, you know, she just was unable to continue. Now, look, I have the ultimate respect for all of these competitors, but to me, it did seem like she was, in a way, trying to guarantee victory. Her coaches, actually, it was Andre Pettinaris of Nova União, actually had to carry her out of the cage. It did not seem like that hard a shot. Again, I don't know. I'm not Luana Pinheiro. And guess what? Luana Pinheiro could kick my ass either way. So, you know, I should definitely throw that out there as well. But to me, it did not look as if she was, you know, that hurt from the shot. And also to me, again, I just think it raises another instance in which I think at some point I wish commissions would revisit some of the rules, because I do believe that illegal upkicks should not be penalized if it's against a downed opponent. So even before then, there was some weigh-in drama. So I guess we'll start Saturday and work backwards. So Saturday, Iwan Kutalaba and Dustin Jacoby fought to a fairly entertaining draw. But for those of you who know Iwan Kutalaba from Moldova, his shtick is he's like the Hulk and he's always super intense, you know, gets into these fights almost sometimes before the fight, during the introductions. So at the weigh-ins, he came right up to Jacoby, grabbed him by the back of the head, and they almost got into a brawl. And by the way, Dana White was there. So, you know, it wasn't like Sean Shelby when he blamed Sean Shelby for the Jeremy Stevens, Jarkar Close incident. To me, I think that the UFC really needs to start fining, or the commission needs to start fining athletes who push, shove, more than just a simple touch of their opponent. It's ridiculous to me. You know, I'm more impressed if you knock a guy out, you know, during the fight as compared with just acting like a super badass during the weigh-ins. Really does not impress me that much. So, anyways, I don't think they need to run that fight back. But I really do think that someone needs to speak to Kutalaba, because the shtick to me is getting old. I don't, you know, it doesn't engender more respect because he acts like an asshole during the weigh-ins. You're one of the toughest guys in the world. You don't have to act like an asshole during the weigh-in, okay? So that's my words about that. So anyways, let's get on to this upcoming Saturday. So I wanted to first complain about the names. So this weekend, it is a fight night, right? So we as UFC fans have learned that anything that is not a UFC pay-per-view, or back in the day, an Ultimate Fighter finale, it was a fight night. Now, this event has two names. It is UFC Vegas 26 or UFC on ESPN 24. I have no idea what to call it. To me, aren't both of them, they, it's still a fight night. Why can't we just continue on with the fight night numbers? I guess maybe because the UFC doesn't, there's probably now been more fight nights than there have been pay-per-views. So they don't want like UFC Fight Night 684. So then why don't we call this UFC Apex so-and-so? Because all of these UFC Vegas events, there's been other events in Vegas from the UFC, all the events at the MGM Grand, T-Mobile Center, Mandalay Bay, at the Pearl, at the Hard Rock, you know, Cox Pavilion, where the Ultimate Fighter 1 finale was. So why don't we call this UFC Apex? It's just, I wish we would just stick with one thing, and then that way I would know which hashtag to use, add in the fight show on our social media. Anyways, the initial main event, as we discussed last week, was supposed to be TJ Dillashaw against Corey Sandhagen, which is an absolute phenomenal barn burner of a bantamweight fight. Unfortunately, TJ Dillashaw sustained a bad cut over his eye, so the fight's been postponed. There's a new main event. It is Michelle Waterson, the Karate Hottie, against Marina Rodriguez. So they are both strawweights, which means they fight at 115, but due to the late notice nature of this, they're both going to fight at flyweight. So I hope the winner of this fight is given their due credit inside the 115 division, despite the fact that they're going to be fighting at 125. To me, you know, I think Michelle Waterson, she has, look, she's a beautiful woman. She's a wonderful personality. You know, she fights for the cause of, you know, celebrating motherhood. She's a very respectful opponent, and she has it. Unfortunately, she has lost some big fights. I'd say her biggest fight in the cage or the octagon, she lost against Ioane and Jędrzejczyk. I don't know if she's quite good enough to be at that elite level, but she has a very interesting, very exciting style, has good grappling, but the karate nature to it, you know, she uses the, like the front side kick almost as a jab, like Lyoto Machida does. I wonder though how she's going to deal with the length, of Marina Rodriguez. It's going to be a really interesting affair. And, you know, whenever I see Michelle Waterson fight, I'm reminded of the fact prior to the UFC, she was in Invicta, which for those of you that don't know, Invicta is a female-only MMA organization, one of the leading ones. It's for a long time, it's been considered like a pipeline to the UFC. Some famous champions there even include Cyborg and other Megan Anderson. So Michelle Waterson used to be the atomweight champion. So for those that don't know, the atomweight division is below strawweight, so it's 105. I don't know if Michelle Waterson, I don't believe, can cut down to 105 anymore. You know, I think she walks around probably, because she, if you follow her Instagram, she usually will show the timeline between how her body changes during the weight cut and during a fight camp. So I think she usually starts a fight camp in the high 130s. And now you're asking her to get down to 105. I don't think she can do that anymore. Having said that, there are still a lot of very good atomweights out there. And while it looks like the UFC might be phasing out the featherweight division, I think that they might want to explore bringing in the atomweight division. Because unlike, you know, I think that, in a way, maybe atomweights will be more put on pleasing fights because it's quicker paced. But, you know, there's, I mean, for instance, so Michelle Waterson is a former Invicta atomweight champion, as is Jessica Penne, who recently came back after a 4-year absence in the UFC. So, you know, it shows you that there has been talent in that division. There still is. So I wonder if the UFC should evaluate, you know, perhaps bringing that into the fold. So not only was there main event drama leading up to this event that's coming up on Saturday, but additionally in the main event, but also in the co-main event. Initially, Cowboy Cerrone was to fight Diego Sanchez. Sanchez and his sensei, his guru, his manager, I really don't know what he refers to him as. The guy's name is Joshua Fabia. We've talked about him before on this show. If you Google him, you will find very interesting articles about him. He's a rather controversial figure. So Fabia and Sanchez approached the UFC requesting all of Sanchez's medical records since he's been with the company, which, you know, dates back to 2005. I guess the UFC wanted to know why that, you know, they requested the records, why it was medically necessary. They didn't receive a response from Diego, and Diego is now cut from the UFC. Since then, Diego first released footage of him and Fabia being recorded by Stefan Bonner at Diego's last fight, which occurred back on Fight Island, where Fabia sort of, you know, non-traditionally broke into or held hostage, I guess you could say, the pre-fight fighter meeting. So, you know, before all the fights, all the fighters meet with the commentary team, you know, to get their thoughts on what they're like as an athlete, what motivates them, what, you know, how their training camp was, what they think of their opponent, strategy, things of that nature. So in this video where Stefan Bonner is filming it, Fabia is going to the broadcast team, which, based upon the video and the audio, it appears it's John Anik. You have Paul Felder was in the room. Megan O'Leary was in the room. Angela Hill was in the room. And I can tell you that they were all very professional, but they were definitely losing their patience. And basically the crux of it was Fabia was trying to plead with them to paint both Diego and him in a more fairer, more positive light. It was really ridiculous. And it's just another misstep that this guy, Joshua Fabia, had. For those of you that watched the YouTube series Looking for a Fight, they had one while they were on Fight Island. And in it, the UFC camera crew caught Fabia interrupting Matt Serra and Dean Thomas while they're having breakfast. And Fabia confronts Matt Serra about Matt Serra's supposedly negative commentary that he had about Fabia on Serra's UFC podcast Unfiltered. So basically, anytime anyone says anything negative about Fabia, he has to challenge them. He has to approach them. You know, I would have, you know, maybe one day we're going to get a call from Joshua Fabia about why, you know, we should be painting him in a more positive light, though I don't think he deserves it. So that was the first step of Diego Sanchez's reaction to being cut. Then he was talking about being free at last, you know, and having being released from the burden of the UFC. Since then, he's released videos claiming that he is fearful for his life and fears repercussion from the UFC. And this is really, if any of you have been following this on Twitter, it's really opened up this rabbit hole of strange conspiracy theories. Leslie Smith, who is going to be fighting Cyborg for the Bellator Women's Featherweight Championship, she even referenced a strange story I completely forgot about, which there was once a prostitute that was killed, or it was murdered in the room next to BJ Penn's prior to BJ Penn's first fight with George St. Pierre at UFC 58. And the day of the fight, BJ Penn was actually brought in for questioning. And so Leslie Smith was mindful enough to say, look, I'm not actually saying that Diego's in danger. I'm actually proving that this is just another crazy conspiracy theory. But now you know how it works in the Twitterverse. These things sort of pick up steam. And, you know, while some people are like, yeah, Diego's crazy, other people are like, no, look, these are things that can happen, blah, blah, blah. Either way, to me, it's just, it's a sad ending. Diego is, whether you like him or not, one of the most important figures of the UFC, due to the fact that he was a central figure of the Ultimate Fighter 1, has been in some of the most memorable fights of all time. I know he made the Hall of Fame for his fight against Clay Guida. And frankly, to me, that isn't even his best fight in the UFC. To me, his best fight in the UFC is against Gilbert Melendez at UFC 166. He also had an amazing war with Martin Campman on a UFC fight night. By the way, I think that was a, see, even back in the day, that was a UFC on Fuel, but they still called the UFC Fight Night. We just need to establish what the events are called. That way, I would just feel better. I like a little bit of order in my life. That's all. I know you guys are thinking I'm crazy, but nevertheless, these are my thoughts, you know, and that's how it is. But anyways, going back to Diego, he plays such a vital role in the growth of the UFC. This is a guy who, you know, has clearly battled various substance abuse issues. I think alcoholism. There was one time for a yearly fighter's award. He showed up incredibly intoxicated, was falling down while presenting an award. And it's just sad, you know. And this is a guy who fought for a title against BJ Penn back at UFC 107 in Nashville. And, you know, went five rounds while it was stopped after a cut opened up on his forehead. But, you know, look, that was BJ when BJ was training and took things seriously. So, look, Diego is an important fighter in the history of MMA. And it's sad that it comes to this, and it's sad that he's not posting videos fearful of his life, even though I think that they're incredibly unfounded. So, bottom line is Diego Sanchez is no longer fighting Cowboy Cerrone. Cowboy Cerrone is fighting Alex Morano on short notice. You know, look, Cowboy is sort of at the end of the road. I think that he would be, you know, if he's able to get out of this fight unscathed, then that's frankly what I'm hoping for more than anything, because of the amount of respect I have for Cowboy, even more than wins and losses. I would choose an opponent and then book a Cowboy farewell fight. And to me, that would be the ultimate either co-main event or feature bout in a UFC pay-per-view. I think he deserves that. And I think that that would be a great way to go out. But to me, I hope more than anything, the Cowboy frankly hangs him up sooner rather than later. So other fights on the card that interest me. So two on the main card, first being Neil Magny versus Jeff Neal. This is a really good welterweight clash. I think the winner of this, frankly, still is a viable contender in the welterweight division. To me, I'm going to lean towards Jeff Neal, but you know, Neil Magny is just that guy who, except unless you're truly in the top tier, he's just going to outwork you and just put in a yeoman's effort and, you know, come away with the victory. Whether the striking, the grappling, he has great cardio. Not as good as Merab Dvalishvili because nobody's as good. Neil Magny's probably in that, would probably be in consideration for that title, though. Then the opening fight on the main card is an excellent women's strawweight fight between Angela Hill and Amanda Ribas. And, you know, Angela Hill just is a tremendous fighter who's been in some absolute nail-biting, close decision losses with the top of the division. And Amanda Ribas is someone who really has started to come on strong and also has a great personality. They both do both just wonderful representations of mixed martial arts, of female mixed martial arts, and this should be a really entertaining affair. To me, the sleeper prelim fight, I know, you know, we are always rather parochial and we're always you know, touting locals, but a Philadelphia product, Kyle Dockhouse, his older brother Chris, I believe now is ranked in the heavyweight division. Kyle, who actually was the first one to enter the UFC between the two, is a middleweight, and he's fighting Phil Hawes, who has been a highly touted middleweight prospect for several years now and is starting to put it together. To me, I think Kyle needs to get it to the ground where he has a distinct advantage, and he very well could. And I think he also has the cardio advantage. So to me, this is a really interesting fight. Phil Hawes is incredibly explosive. It can knock out anyone, frankly, at 185 or even probably 205. But, you know, I think his gas tank fails him towards the end of fights. And Kyle's been in some dogfights already in the UFC. So I think this could really be a huge opportunity for him to open some eyes and start to work his way up the middleweight ladder. So, you know, all in all, I think it is an interesting night of fights, even despite the fact we lost a great main event and then also lost an interesting sort of throwback co-main event. But nevertheless, I think it should be, you know, entertaining. I wish we would, again, agree upon a name. Maybe we might throw out a poll, add in the fight show on Twitter, saying, what would you prefer this be called? UFC Vegas, UFC on ESPN, UFC Apex, or just go with UFC Fight Night? Either way, like, let's just agree on one so that way I'll know what to hashtag. Anyways, the Professional Fighters League actually has a really big week. This will be their third week into this most recent season. And in America, this is going to be their first week on ESPN. They've previously been on ESPN2. And also, there are three fighters that are making their debuts that are sort of big time, either big names or you know, really big resumes, so to speak. So Fabricio Werdum, the former UFC heavyweight champion, and Muhammad Usman, that's Kamaru's, I believe it's his older brother, but it is definitely his bigger brother. He is a heavyweight. He is a giant of a man. They are making their promotional debuts, not against each other, but making their promotional debuts this week. And then the former judo gold medalist, Kayla Harrison, is making her season debut. She fought in the Professional Fighters League last year. So it's going to be very interesting to see Kayla's development. She is sort of, as soon as she entered MMA, she sort of was touted as perhaps the fighter that can beat Amanda Nunes. She's now fighting down at 145. At first, she only fought at 155. So obviously, Amanda's not going to go up to 155, but she'll fight at 145. So it'll be interesting to see her development. I think she's very good. I need to see a little more before I'm ready to say, yep, she could definitely take Amanda. But nevertheless, still very interesting fight. I also think it's really interesting, for those of you that don't know, one of the PFL's big acquisitions prior to the season was Anthony Pettis, the former WEC and UFC lightweight champion. And Anthony Pettis actually lost in his first week. Now, it doesn't, because this is a season format, he could go on to still win the championship. But, you know, I think it definitely took something away. This was a really big acquisition for them. Anthony Pettis, one of the more popular and entertaining fighters in the history of mixed martial arts. And it really shows, I guess, that he's slowing down, unfortunately. But, you know, let's see if he can bounce back. That's the interesting part, again, to the season format, which the PFL has, where, you know, based upon points, you can then enter the playoffs and then move forward for the championship. So tomorrow night, Bellator will have their 258th event. So Bellator 258. The main event is going to be Juan Archuleta against Sergio Pettis, Anthony's younger brother, for the bantamweight championship. I think this is an excellent fight. You know, Sergio is a great fighter, as is obviously the champion Juan Archuleta. You know, I just question, you know, Sergio is, to me, still small for the bantamweight division. So I wonder if Juan Archuleta is going to muscle him around. But nevertheless, I think it's going to be an entertaining five rounds of fighting. This was supposed to be, perhaps even more importantly than the title fight, this was the day when we were going to see Anthony Johnson take on Yoel Romero in the last fight of the first round of the Bellator's Light Heavyweight Grand Prix. Unfortunately, Yoel Romero was not cleared to fight due to some kind of eye injury or condition. So Anthony Johnson, fortunately, we're going to get to see him in his promotional debut for Bellator against Jose Augusto. Honestly, this is just super disappointing because this was such a fascinating matchup. I wanted to see how Yoel looked at 205. These two guys are just, those Anthony Johnson and Yoel Romero, there are just certain fighters that invoke fear just because of their strength, their athleticism. Anthony Johnson, Yoel Romero are among those two, among guys that invoke the fear, even for spectators. And so I was really bummed that this fight is not going to take place. But I will say Anthony Johnson looks in the best shape of his life. And I feel badly for Jose Augusto. I think this is going to be a short night. Anthony Johnson really looks to be taking care of business physically. And, you know, frankly, I still wish he was in the UFC. But, you know, I hope Bellator is able to use him and spotlight and you know, showcase him. Obviously, they were trying to do so when he was going to booked against Yoel Romero. it fell through. So also on the card is Patricky Fieri, Pitbull number two, the brother of the champ at Bellator, as well as Michael Venom Page, the famous striker from the UK. So I'm sure all you UK fans are excited to see him. Also on Saturday night, we have a very important boxing contest between Canelo Alvarez and Billy Joe Saunders. It's going to be taking place at AT&T Stadium, which is where the Dallas Cowboys play. It is the unification of all the super middleweight titles. So Canelo has the WBA, the WBC, and the ring super middleweight belts, and Billy Joe Saunders has the WBO. So it is to unify all of them. There was a little bit of pre-fight drama before Saunders threatened not to withdraw or to no-show, but obviously in the end of the day, if you're going to be making 10 figures, you know, you're going to show up. So, you know, the main issues were first the ring size. Saunders was hoping to have a 22-foot ring, but in the contract it said it was up to the commission to decide, and they had decided on a 20-foot ring. Now, you know, I was speaking with a friend of the program and guest host, the hired gun, Zach Messner, who gave me his thoughts on the fight. He thinks that, you know, the reason, and it sort of makes sense, obviously, with Billy Joe Saunders, two reasons why he was complaining about this. One is he wants a larger ring so he could sort of run around, stick and move, play pitty-patter, hopefully just win on points. And second, he's just trying to play mind games with Canelo and hopefully just get into Canelo's head. You know, but we've seen, though, in the past, that really is not something that, you know, when have we seen Canelo, you know, not perform to his best or perform poorly due to, you know, mental lapses? Frankly, I would think even going all the way back to his fight with Floyd, that was just early in his career, but I don't think the moment was too big for him. So I don't think Floyd got in his head, things of that nature. Saunders was also complaining about the judges, but frankly, you know, people are always complaining about the judges. In the end of the day, he was not going to, you know, no show, you know. So in terms of the analysis from the hired gun, these are some of the main points that he discussed with me and he wanted me to share to our loyal audience. So to him, you know, he did point out Canelo back, you know, in Canelo's earlier stages of his career, he did have difficulties with southpaws. But, you know, now he's in his prime. He is far more able and adept to deal with southpaws. And while Saunders is crafty, you know, Zach thinks that Canelo is going to be able to outpoint him in a competitive, but he does want to warn everyone, perhaps a bit of a boring decision. It's not, as I like to say, this won't necessarily be the fistic fireworks that Mauro Ranallo talks about, but I do think it's an entertaining decision. It's an important fight. Credit Canelo for taking on this kind of fight. You know, this is the negative of boxing is that these are the kinds of fights that don't, that sometimes just don't occur. You know, for all the complaints we have about the UFC, at least at some point, the best fight the best. And at least here we, you know, say what you want about Billy Joe Saunders. You know, he tries to work some of his Conor. He sort of does like Conor McGregor bullshit. I think even, you know, yesterday he was supposed to have a face off with Canelo, and instead he said, "Oh yeah, it was time for me to like hold my balls or play with my balls." Like he sort of marches to his own beat and hopes that he's going to psych out his opponents. But in spite of that, he is a very good fighter. He is a champion. And, you know, this is in this weight class, this is the guy that Canelo needs to fight. So credit him for doing that. Obviously, he's going to be making a shit ton of money in the process. This fight is going to be on DAZN, on the DAZN app. And I'm assuming based upon when this fight will occur, it's going to be around the same time as when Michelle Waterson and Marina Rodriguez fight. So, you know, choose whichever fight you want. I would probably go Canelo Alvarez on the big screen, Michelle Waterson, Marina Rodriguez on the phone. Nevertheless, completely up to you. Yeah, you know, but either way, it's always good when we have options for us combat sports fans on a weekend, and that's what we're all about. So, look, I thank you all for tuning in, for listening. Obviously, you know, we thank our partners, Sportinarium, Sportinarium USA, Sportinarium.com, at Sportinarium on all social media. Please, again, check us out at In The Fight Show on all social media. So that is Twitter, Instagram, Facebook. Join our Facebook group. Go to InTheFight.net. We're coming out with more written content. We are slowly taking over, and it is just such a pleasure to do this with the captain, Mike Lipinski, and always to bring along our buddy, the hired gun, Zach Messner. It's going to be, you know, it's definitely going to be a great summer of fights, and look forward to bringing you more and more entertaining content. So until next week, everyone, please stay safe, stay healthy, happy. God bless everyone, and we will see you next week. Take care.